Hello, Cherokee County. This is Lynn Saunders, your host today of Cherokee Conversations. You know how much I just love the nonprofit world, and I just meet more and more people at every meeting and every group that I go to. And about, oh, I don't know, how a year or so ago, I met this gentleman. I'm named Tom Coughlin at I think WCBN, our Woodstock Christian Business Network, that meets at First Baptist Woodstock on Wednesdays at 8 to 9 o'clock. And you showed up at my Rotary once or twice as well. And I think that's where we connected. Tom is representing Firm Foundation Treatment Center for Men. And it's a sobriety program for people with addictions to bring them through that addiction. So that much I know. And then you just recently shared with me that you were somebody in addictions that struggled and that now you have been long-term recovery. And I'm so grateful that the Lord brought you through and congratulations for all of that. So thank you for joining us, Tom. Before you start to talk about this great treatment center, and I have followed a few things that you've been working on and praying through over these last several months, would you just share with our listeners a little bit about you, your family, your faith, whatever God puts on your heart about you, and then we'll talk about your ministry.
Well, thanks so much, Lynn, for having me, and just so appreciate this opportunity to speak with you today and for what you're doing for our community. Thanks so much. So again, yeah, my name is Tom Coughlin. One of the fun, interesting facts about me, I am the youngest of 13 children.
13 children.
13 children. I have two sisters and 10 older brothers, and I am the youngest of that crew. And yes, one mom, one dad, and single births, every single one of them. And
Were you spoiled rotten as a child because you were
well, that's
the
what my older
last
siblings say. I just said I was loved.
Oh.
But
Oh
yeah,
my
I grew up
gosh.
in upstate, grew up in upstate New York, grew up as a person of faith,
Okay.
growing up. And yeah, in fact, even went through my college years and got my degree in religious studies.
That's awesome. That's whereabouts upstate New York?
I grew up near Lake Placid, New York, so not far from the Canadian border, and went to college in Albany, New York.
Okay, my mother's family and my mother is from the Rochester Sodus Point area, which is on Lake Ontario. I went to college up there to race sailboats, like the 30 to 40 footers. Oh, yes, I was a maniac. And well, kids, they have no fear. And so they would, grown up people would put me at the tiller and they'd let me go through these narrow passages. And I took to water. It was fun. Now I'm older and wiser and there's no way. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful in upstate New York and the
It sure
water.
is. Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. Tell me about you now, religious studies.
Religious studies major, and I'm one of those people. I love the faith. I love studying and understanding faith. My hope was to go on and get a master's in social work, but I did get married at 22 years old and didn't step right back into school. But interesting enough, a few years down the line, I found myself falling into addiction, as you mentioned earlier in the program. And it's interesting. I never thought I could fall into that. I thought I'm too smart. I came from a good family. This can't really happen to me. And then a few years into it, I really realized what was going on. And then I thought, you know what? I'll stop this when I want to. I'll stop this when I can figure this out. And lo and behold, 14 years later, through the grace of God, I did wake up and go into my first recovery meeting. I finally got to the point I realized I couldn't do this on my own.
So, do you mind if I ask, was it drugs? Was it alcohol? What was all of
Yeah,
your.
my addiction was full time was alcohol. I am somebody I found out through the years, it's not what I drink or how much I drink, but it's what happens to me when I drink. So in my case, I could consume by the end of my addiction a lot of alcohol. But for some I've worked with through the years who didn't drink nearly the amount, but they actually had the same thing that happened to them. And so really it's a matter of what happens to us that it just really steals our life, our spirit. So much about us is what addiction does.
So what does it do to you?
It got me to the point that I literally didn't care. And that was so hard to believe. You could hear people who loved you even say, Tom, I hate this is happening to you. You know, do this. In the back of your head, most of us wouldn't say this who enter addiction, but I've had conversations with many men specifically, and most of us in our head are just going, I don't care. Because putting that much alcohol into your system for years, just unfortunately, number one, it's a depressant. Number two, it's just really making you exhausted and really killing the spirit within you. And unfortunately, many of us got to that point in our heads, we didn't care.
What did it take to get you to that first meeting?
Oh my goodness. It took literally years, Lynn. I was in my full-time addiction for 14 years from the time I was 28 until I was 42. But for 10 of those last years, I knew I was an alcoholic. But my fear was, I thought I knew what recovery was going to look like. And I thought I knew what those meetings in those buildings that people went to go get help, I knew what those were all about because I'd gotten my religious studies degree. I went to school with people who were becoming counselors as well for addiction. And I'm like, I know what this is. And boy, I couldn't have been farther from the truth of really what recovery would look like. I thought it was the end when it was truly the beginning.
In that, I have been in social services for, almost 30 years through Encompass Ministries. We partner with a lot of rehab centers, sobriety types of programs, and we feed them also. So, talk to me offline about trying to get a partnership going if you're going to need, some groceries for your men going down the road. But we've done some kind of training with them too, and they're not always the stereotypical people that even good Christian people will put people in boxes with that stereotype. They must be this or they must look like that. And there are some really amazing people. Not to talk about me too much because this is your interview. One of the highlights of my training that I have done in rehab programs was a women's program in Cobb County. And I did life skills with those women for about 2 years. And you would see those just kind of coming in fresh. The judge was giving them a second chance if they were a mother, had young children, or pregnant, believe it or not. And they'd come in fresh and they would just not go through the fancy detox. They are detoxing the hard way. And you would see week after week, they'd sit up straight. Then there might be a sparkle in their eye. Then they'd have a conversation. And then through the program, you would see them start to mentor the new girls coming in, going through the hard steps. That ministered to me, I think, more than it ministered to them, to just be a part of the, it's a hard struggle. If you have the right people around you, I think it's easier. Wouldn't you say that?
Absolutely. Having a system in place is absolutely crucial. And it's something I had to have, but it's something I didn't want to do. And number one, I didn't think I needed until I finally stepped in and realized after years again of thinking I could stop this on my own, trying to stop at certain times. And after a little while, I'd kick back in again, or I'd only have this many drinks. And it was always this negotiation in my head that went on and on, trying to figure out to do it by myself. And I never could. And I tried it every single way, Lynn, I think was possible. In fact, I've even talked to people since I've gotten sober that did the same thing. And every
Really.
single one of us just had to hit that point of surrender and ask for help.
Surrender. That's the key word. That's the key word. So
It's
then,
amazing.
so you're now successful. So how many years have you been then in long-term recovery?
Yeah, I'm entering 14 years of sobriety now.
Wow.
Through the
So
grace of
that,
God.
yes,
Yes.
14 and 14.
And I said that you said the term early on, you and I spoke just before we got started, and I said I'm in long-term sobriety. It's a very interesting concept, and how do you measure that? I've just heard many people through the years tell me that really anybody who makes it into about 5 years or longer of sobriety, they do consider that long-term sobriety.
So how
So
long did it take you to feel, start to feel normal? Like you didn't need it or it wasn't a crutch or you crave, whatever. How long did that take?
From my story, I would say it happened immediately. I was very blessed in this way because I think by the time mine went on for so long and I was so unhealthy, and for the last 2 years, I either worked or I was drinking. And I got to the point of almost outside of work, I got to almost complete isolation, and the mental and spiritual pain was so difficult. And then also the lack of sleep because you're not sleeping well at all because you're never getting any REM sleep because of you're always burning the alcohol off. So when I'm to answer your question, that last drink I took and in the morning I woke up, I was done. And I'm so grateful because I know some other brothers and sisters that struggle with this long after they get sober about wanting another drink or thinking, ruminating about drinking again or using again. And in my case, I was just done. I tried it so I literally woke up, I used to say 1,000, but it literally I woke up a couple thousand mornings in a row thinking, I can't do this. I've got to stop. I've got to figure this out. And finally, when it was over, there was a lot of fear, but there was this absolute amazing feeling of, thank God, this is over.
Yeah,
This is
what,
over.
and that's a gift that he gave it to
Yeah.
you that way. You know, when you hit your enough, you had your you were done. That is a gift. Congratulations. I'm so proud of you. And now how you're back in pastoral ministry, social work, Firm Foundation Treatment Center, how you got involved, your role.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lynn. So yeah, there in Atlanta, we are blessed with a number of different treatment centers, all the way from detox center, which is typically the highest level of care, to inpatient and outpatient. And then we have got programs for beyond that. And we came into being about a year and a half ago. And
Okay.
Firm Foundation was started by Brian Eicher and his wife, Allison. And Brian is an LCSW. He's a licensed therapist that's worked in the field of addiction and recovery for a number of years. And he's worked in the industry, he's worked in private practice, and he absolutely had an amazing calling. Came to Christ, got baptized, and within a few months after that, he felt and knew he had a strong calling to start a men's Christ-centered evidence-based treatment center. What I mean by that is we do the full clinical work with trained licensed therapists. We have approved a curriculum that we do provide. Plus, we come in with a very strong understanding, standing in a world, Christian worldview. We do take health insurance, so we can allow that. But one of the other beauties about our program is actually we own our own home. And we are actually getting ready to buy another home because we need more space for more men. The importance of having your own home is that you can really build community inside the treatment pretty well, but outside of treatment when the men are living together, they're doing life together. So important that these gentlemen are there for accountability for one another. There is folks that do stay in the house. There's men that stay with them who are on staff with us who help to help us guide. Helping them taking them to events. You know, they do some fun things too while the men are living together, but they also go to a lot of meetings. So there's a lot of moving parts with what we do.
So in this program, it this is this considered a residential program then, where they are there for X number of weeks?
Yes, we are technically considered an outpatient program. And
Okay.
we are what's considered, to give you the terminology, a PHP IOP, which means partial hospitalization, intensive outpatient, where typically in most cases the men do come to treatment and they also live in our home. There's a rare case where some of the men can commute in if they have a safe place to live, but that has to be an evaluation done by our medical team with the potential client to see which is best for them. But we're typically not the first place people land. In most cases, they first would go to detox first to get stabilization, maybe some medications in that case. And
Okay.
then typically they will go from there into our program.
How about, are they not allowed to work then because they need to be in these meetings and accountable to the program and the staff?
That's a great question. In fact, the first 30 days is so structured. Full day that typically they're not working. They're just doing the therapeutic work, again, building that relationship with the community. So the first 30 days of what we call PHP, partial hospitalization, that's what they're doing. Then as they move into the next phase of intensive outpatient programming, they typically will at that point go back to work. And it'll be for part-time. For the next 30 days. And again, these are approximate timelines. For the
Yeah.
next 30 days, they'll go back to work part-time because still have work to do as far as in the classroom for the first half of the day, and then they can go out into back into the work world. And if they're not working anymore, we do have a requirement that you do need to be doing some volunteer work at the very least because you need to start giving back and being involved.
Well, community is everything. And while they're in this program, it sounds like you're building community within the house. But when they leave the house, do they have any way to keep that community with your program, or do they really move on to another step or another something?
Yeah, is they're typically going through our program. We are always, as they're taking the next step, getting them ready for the next step. We are getting them involved back with their, of course, with their families, back into their community, getting involved with 12-step programs in their community. So that part is extremely important to us. And we actually do have a program while the men are going through their work with us. The family, we also do have a program for the family members, so it helps prepare them. So when the man comes back into the home, it's getting the family prepared for what they're going to encounter, what to expect,
That's
and things like that.
fantastic. Yeah. Also, at the training center before COVID, we would have support for families, for children, and for their spouses, typically, were the ones who would come. Then the stories would just, well, break your heart. You know these stories as well. So the support that you give to the families is critical. Is that through support groups or is that classroom hours that they come in as well?
So for the families, ideally what we try to have them do is actually we do Zoom calls with them minimally once a week as a group, and then individually they also meet as well with our therapists and with our team. So that's extremely important. Like once again, and our hope and prayer is as they move along, we hope that they'll get involved with other programs out there that are for the family members, for their health and healing. Things like Al-Anon or PAL, which is Parents of Addicted Loved Ones. And there's several other programs like that that are available for the families because they have to go find their own help and healing too. Because this is a addiction gets to be a family disease, but there also can be a family healing right around this as well.
And I would imagine trust is really hard to rebuild. I remember again when I was working with the women's program in Cobb. That when they were getting close to being discharged, all of a sudden, I mean, you can teach people how to cook, how to meal plan, how to do all that fun stuff, and you would think that the women would thrive on that. Their favorite module that we would do is toxic relationships and how do I deal with the person or the situation back at home? Is there another option to not go back home? Or, and in that particular program, they didn't have the family support that you're describing. Now they might now. It was a fantastic program back then, but trust is so hard to rebuild. How long do you think it really takes for it to not be the elephant in the middle of the room when a family is reunited?
Very honestly, Lynn, that really every case can be so different. But I think the more that both the person with the addiction and the family can go get their help and healing, I think that really could help progress that along. And it does help progress it along so much faster. And it's actually very unique when the individuals typically come home. It's if you haven't had them around the house full time, you're also seeing a change in rejuvenated man coming back into your house. And so there's a little bit of fear there because you're like, wait a minute, this is a person maybe like I used to know years ago, and this person has returned. And there's an excitement, but there's a fear at the same time because there's always a fear in the back of the heads. And I've talked to the family members often of like, but what if he takes this again or does this again or drinks this again? And then what happens now? And so there is a fear that's there, but through the course of time, a lot of healing can happen. But there's continued work for us to do. Like personally for me, I still go to recovery meetings. I don't personally feel like I'm going to pick up a drink anytime soon, but at the same time, I go because I love to go today. Those are my people, those are my friends, that's my support system. And I don't go because I have to. I go because I want to today.
What an amazing story. God has really blessed you. Now, I know that in things that I've read about your program, it's Christ-centered, and that
Yes.
really is the true healing in all of this. It's not just how-tos, but it's changing your heart. And you used the word earlier, surrender. I don't know how somebody goes through that process to where you, like you described, you try to do it in your head, in your head, in your head, and then all of a sudden you're done. And you surrender and what that looks like. But I applaud that. So you have a house, and how many people are in that house? And it's in Canton.
Yeah, so we actually do have a current home, and this
Okay.
one is in Acworth, and
Okay.
we that was purchased right at the time we opened, and now we're actually in need of a larger home. So we are purchasing a home in literally in downtown Canton. It's on 5 acres, and
Oh.
we are going to have to do a major renovation on this home because it needs to be changed to a house that's going to have 10 bedrooms and multiple bathrooms because the new home will hold 20 plus men. So we needed
Wow.
more space. So as we progress into the new home, we will let go of the old home that we own because we do, again, want to build that community, have all the men in one home together. We think that's incredibly important. The beauty is we're going to be right near downtown Canton there. So there'll be several things that the men will be able to access being right there. Again, if they're looking in need of a job, many of these men are professionals. So they will go back to their jobs, but others will need jobs, they'll need opportunities. And there'll be such a plethora of resources right within that area, let alone churches, let alone other community events and availabilities of libraries and other things that the men can access. Remember, I always like to let people know that a program, like many recovery programs are, very few of the people are there because they are required or court ordered. Some are. In our case, these are men who have chosen to come in and go to the next level of treatment because they want to get better. They want to go move back into their communities and become productive citizens again. I understand there's a fear out there of who are these men? Who are these people? They're like our neighbors. They're like our brothers. In fact, in my case, it's me, you
Yeah,
know, who are just trying to gain our life back and figure out why this addiction, but really what was behind the addiction. So that's part of the journey.
the why behind the what. That's a
Yes.
big thing in social services. So
Yes.
any future plans or vision to have a facility for women?
Wow. Yes, absolutely.
Oh,
So there's
good.
actually, so as you stated earlier, the treatment center itself right now is in Woodstock. And a lot of people are like, okay, you're buying a home in Canton. Well, there is a long-term goal here of what we're doing. Since we found this home that's a perfect place for the men, and we're going to need a lot of help with that home. It's a not-for-profit. And so we are going to be asking a lot of businesses, individuals, people who've got a heart for recovery to step along, come alongside us to help us pay for this. But at the same time, what we're going to do is eventually move the treatment center up into the Canton area for the men. We'll keep the Woodstock one because eventually our prayer is in 2 years, we're going to mirror image this and then open a women's Christ-centered PHP IOP program at the current location in Woodstock.
Well, I'm going to keep in touch with you on this. So if you would just keep me aware of the benchmarks and the milestones that you cross or you're getting close to, because I would love to keep our community involved because it's a big problem. We're running out of time. We just got a couple of more minutes. I saw too in the notes that you all partner with about 100 other agencies or facilities. Can you quickly just put that together for us?
Yes, absolutely. We want to be a resource for our community. And that being somebody needs to find out how do I get help for my loved one or somebody I know that's having a problem, they can call us directly. They can call my cell phone number directly. We are connected with about 100 other treatment centers in the Atlanta market and beyond. We've
Wow.
built these relationships so we can know which one may take your insurance, which ones might be free. Which ones are the best fit for what you're walking through right now? We are specific men's, yes, and we are Christ-centered, but we can help anybody who's got a loved one to make sure we get them the right help at the right level of care somewhere. That's our hearts, because many of us, not all, but many of us who work in this industry are in recovery. And this is a passion because it's personal.
So, give us some contact information, a website, an email, a phone number, if you will. So,
Yeah.
and if you could say it twice, each one twice, because people are probably now running for their pencil and paper. So, just want to make sure that they get it right.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn. I appreciate that. So let's start with the website. Our website is firmfoundationtreatment.com. And I'll say that again, firmfoundationtreatment.com. And
Okay.
people are welcome to give me a call directly on my cell phone. And I wish my phone would ring more. I give my cell phone out a lot, but I wish it would ring more. But my direct cell phone number is 770-313-713.
Okay.
7188. And again, my name is Tom Coughlin. Again, that number is 770-313-7188. And the last thing I'll give is what you asked for, my email address. I'll say it and then I'll spell it. It's Tom at firmfoundationtreatment.com. thehomeschoolingcoach.com. And Tom is spelled THOM. So THOM at firmfoundationtreatment.com.
Thank you. You have really, really been inspiring to talk to. I was expecting that this would be more about the treatment center, but I really took to your story, and that's the hook. And I know with our listeners out there, they know somebody who has got a problem, or they know their friends or in their church, there are people who are struggling, and you can't do it alone. And I'm so proud of you. And you know who you are and the man you are. You represent yourself very, very well in the community, and the organization is blessed to have you and your testimony as a part. And thank you for what you do, because you're saving lives. You're saving
Lynn, thank
families.
you. Well, thank you for giving us a voice and allowing a program like ours to come on here and speak into this. Because one of my friends said, you and addiction, a lot of us think that we're bad people, especially when we're walking through our addiction. We're not being bad people, we're hurting people. And we're just people that need to be given hope and know that there's help and there's a lifeline out there. And that's what we are here to offer.
Great words to end on. Tom, thank you so much, and God bless you for all that you do.
Thank you, Lynn.